Brothers and sisters, my name is Preston Wilcox, and for the last 20-25 years I've been stockpiling information on or by Malcolm, and some of you may have heard of a service called Malcolm X Lovers Network, and we have subscribers around the country who receive information monthly, and many of them send us information which we later put on the wire. And in fact, we have some of our Malcolm X lovers in the audience. Walter Lippmann, you want to stand up? Yeah. And there's a brother who's not here who gave me the idea. Some of you might know him. Omar Farouk comes out of Terre Haute, Indiana. And he's the most prolific retriever and disseminator of Malcolm's information that I know of. We tried to get him here, but he couldn't make it. And then some of the others are in other workshops. But this workshop is entitled Malcolm X in New York. And I prefer to call it Malcolm X in Harlem, because I maintain that Malcolm had a unique relationship with Harlem, and in fact, still has a unique relationship with Harlem. For instance, daily as I walk 125th Street, I run into brothers and sisters from the various Muslim groups, and they keep asking me, much in the same way Farrakhan asked in Emerge magazine, why are we lifting up Malcolm and not the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or the Honorable Wallace Muhammad? And in fact, I just heard it last night as I invited some of them to come down here today. The other thing I just want to comment, if you lived in Harlem, you either had to be a Malcolm X follower or a Martin Luther King follower. And if you were a Martin Luther King follower, you were usually labeled as being an integrationist or Uncle Tom. Some of you may know, every time Martin came to Harlem, he met some local hostility. For instance, he was picketed inside the Siloam, Salem Methodist Church. And all of you know that on September 21st, 1958, a demented woman stabbed him in the Bloomington store where he was having a book sale. And it so happened that the night before, there was a Buy Black protest in front of the store. And also when he came to Harlem to install Reverend Wyatt T. Walker at the New Canaan Baptist Church, there was so much pressure on him, and the police were protecting him, he had to go into the back door of the church. But interestingly enough, I knew and know many of the people who were protesting his presence there, and I still have this fond recollection on April 4th, 1968, when one of the young people who had been protesting against him came to me crying in great sadness because Martin was gone. And we still have this dynamic tension. My own personal feeling is that Malcolm and Martin were blood brothers. They understood each other. They needed each other. And the fact that they lived at the same time was very important. And many of us use the picture of them shaking hands, smiling, as a symbol of African-American unity. And across the country, there's four or five groups who do that. But you still have this tension. One other example, I happened to be in Atlanta on the night when the Martin Luther King Center for Social Change was inaugurated. And we were sitting in the gym in Morris Brown College, and they were flashing civil rights pictures around the wall. Every now and then Martin was in a picture and there'd be a great applause. One picture flashed of Malcolm and the place went crazy. And this was in Martin's base. His mother was there, his father was there. A lot of the followers of his movement were there, but still the crowd just almost took the roof off the place. And it gave me a sense of the strength of Malcolm in our community. And I think those of us who were privileged to live in Harlem when he was there, think we got some special insights on a very unique human being. I was wondering what his reaction would have been if he'd have walked in on the previous workshop. As some of you may know, that at one time there was a group of academicians formed in the late 60s, and most of them would not admit Malcolm to the organization on the basis that he didn't have formal credentials. Yet, those of us who experienced him recognize him as probably being the most intelligent individual we ever ran into. And so I wondered what his reaction would be to the kind of theoretical presentations that were being made about him. And finally, someone made an observation about field niggers and house niggers. And they said that there were some house niggers who are able to behave revolutionary. And when I thought about Malcolm, to me, Malcolm was a field nigger all the way. He never became a house nigger, and it was impossible for him to even think about becoming a house nigger. And I do want to say that I worked on a college camp, many college campuses, and what always amazed me about the brothers and sisters on the college campuses, in my judgment, they were lambs on the college campuses. And they were revolutionaries when they were off the campus. When I saw Malcolm on the campus, he was the same person on 125th Street and 116th Street that he was on the campus. And today, we're very privileged to have two people of Harlem who experienced him. And I think you're privileged to have them to present to you. I'm trying to decide who I want to introduce first. Maybe I'll introduce Yuri first. Everybody in Harlem knows or has heard of Yuri Kochiyama. She used to be a waitress in a place on the corner of 125th and St. Nicholas Avenue called Tom Ford's. And if you went in there for breakfast, before you could order, she would give you a flyer about a meeting that was taking place. And she was an excellent communicator of information. She still is. In fact, I was thinking about the fact we have not replicated her. There's no other Yuris. And that's maybe one of our problems. That as we came along, we didn't produce other people who carried on what we were trying to do. Some of you probably remember her photograph in the book Autobiography of Malcolm X, leaning over Malcolm, trying to revive him. And I'm reminded that Gene Roberts, the agent who had infiltrated the nation and who was there on the day of the assassination, last year he confessed and he talked about when he went back to the precinct, they asked him, why were you giving Malcolm X mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? And he said, I thought as a policeman I'm supposed to save lives. And the sad thing about Gene Roberts is that he didn't realize that he was being used until he used that picture to get into the Panthers, and then he surfaced during the Panther 21. And during the trial, I remember Gerald Lefcourt asking him, weren't you involved in the assassination of Malcolm X? Well, in the article last year, he said that was the first time he realized he'd been used by the police department against his own people. Sad. And so it gives me great pleasure to bring to you Yuri, and she'll talk about her own, whatever she wants to talk about.